Chapter 2 At Yrsa's. I write to inform you that during my most recent audience, the Nansur Emperor, quite without provocation, publicly addressed me as fool. You are, no doubt, unmoved by this. It has become a common occurrence. The consult eludes us now more than ever. We hear them only in the secrets of others. We glimpse them only through the eyes of those who deny their very existence. Why should we not be called fools? The deeper the consult secretes itself among the great factions, the madder our rantings sound to their ears. We are, as the damned Nansur would say, a hunter in the thicket, one who, by the very act of hunting, extinguishes all hope of running down his prey. Anonymous Mandate Schoolman, Letter to At Yrsa's. Late Winter, 4110, Year of the Tusk, At Yrsa's. Summoned back home, Akamian thought, bruised by the irony of that word, home. He could think of few places in the world, Golgotharoth, certainly, the Scarlet Spires, maybe, more heartless than At Yrsa's. Small and alone in the center of the audience hall, Akamian struggled with his composure. The members of the Quorum, the ruling council of the School of Mandate, stood in small knots dispersed throughout the shadows, scrutinizing him. They saw, he knew, a stocky man dressed in a plain brown travel smock, his square-cut beard streaked by fingers of silver. He would convey the sturdy sense of one who'd spent years on the road, the wide stance, the tanned, leathery skin of a low-caste laborer. He would look nothing like a sorcerer. But then, no spy should. Annoyed by their scrutiny, Akamian suppressed the urge to ask if they wanted, like any scrupulous slaver, to check his teeth. Home at last. At Yrsa's, the citadel of the School of Mandate, was home to him, would always be home, but the place dwarfed him in inexplicable ways. It was more than the ponderous architecture. At Yrsa's had been built in the manner of the ancient North, whose architects had known nothing of arches or domes. Her inner galleries were forests of thick columns, their ceilings obscured by canopies of darkness and smoke. Stylized reliefs sheathed every pillar, providing the shining braziers with too much detail, or so Akamian thought. With every flicker, the very ground seemed to shift. Finally, one of the Quorum addressed him.
The Thousand Temples is no longer to be ignored, Akamian, at least since this Mathanet has seized the seat and declared himself Shrya.
Inevitably, it had been Notsera who'd broached the silence. The last man Akamian wanted to hear speak was always the first. I've only heard rumors, he replied in a measured tone, the tone one always took when addressed by Notsera.
Believe me, Notsera said sourly, the rumors scarcely do the man justice.
But how long can he survive? A natural question. Many Shryas had heaved at the rudder of the Thousand Temples, only to find that, like any immense ship, it refused to turn.
Oh, he survives, Notsera said. Flourishes, in fact. All the cults have come to him in Sumna. All have kissed his knee, and with none of the political maneuvering obligatory to such transitions of power. No petty boycotts, not even a single abstention.
He paused to allow Akamian time to appreciate the significance of this.
He has stirred something.
The grand old sorcerer pursed his lips, as though leashing his next word like a dangerous dog.
Something novel, and not merely within the Thousand Temples.
But surely we've seen his kind before, Akamian ventured. Zealots holding out redemption in one hand to draw attention away from the whip in the other, sooner or later, everyone sees the whip.
No, we've not seen this kind before. None has moved this fast or with such cunning. Mathanet is no mere enthusiast. Within the first 3 weeks of his tenure, two plots to poison him were uncovered, and here's the thing, by Mathanet himself. No fewer than 7 of the Emperor's agents were exposed and executed in Somna. This man is more than simply shrewd, far more. Akamian nodded and narrowed his eyes. Now he understood the urgency of his summons. Above all, the mighty detest change. The great factions had prepared a place for the 1,000 temples and its shrier. But this, Mathanet, as the Nroni would say, had pissed in the whiskey. More unsettling still, he had done so with intelligence.
There is to be a holy war, Akamian.
Stunned, Akamian searched the dark silhouettes of the other Quorum members for confirmation. Surely you jest. Notsera strode from the shadows, pausing only when he stood close enough to tower over him. Akamian resisted the urge to step back. The ancient sorcerer had always possessed a disconcerting presence, intimidating because of his height, and yet pathetic because of his great age. His skin seemed an insult to the silks that draped him.
This is no jest, I assure you.
Against whom, then?
The Phanum?
Throughout its history, the Three Seas had witnessed only 2 prior holy wars, both waged against the schools rather than the heathens. The last, the so-called Scholastic Wars, had been disastrous for both sides. At Ursus itself had been besieged for 7 years.
We don't know. So far, Mathanet has declared only that there will be a holy war. He has not deigned to tell anyone against whom. As I said, he's a fiendishly cunning man.
So you fear another Scholastic War? Akamian could scarcely believe he was having this conversation. The possibility of another Scholastic War, he knew, should horrify him. But instead, his heart pounded with exhilaration. Had it come to this? Had he grown so tired of the Mandate's futile mission that he now greeted the prospect of war against the Enrithi as a disfigured species of relief?
That is precisely what we fear. Once again, the cultic priests openly denounce us, refer to us as unclean.
Unclean. The Chronicle of the Tusk, held by the 1,000 temples to be the very word of the god, had named them thus, those few with the learning and the innate ability to work sorcery. Cut from them their tongues, the holy word said, for their blasphemy is an abomination like no other. Akamian's father, who, like many Nroni, had despised the tyranny exercised by Etursis over Enron, had beaten this belief into him. Faith may die, but her sentiments remain eternal.
But I've heard nothing of this.
The old man leaned forward. His dyed beard was cut square like Akamian's own, but meticulously braided in the fashion of the Eastern Ketye. Akamian was struck by the incongruity of old faces and dark hair.
But you wouldn't have, would you now, Akamian? You've been in High Aenon. What priest would denounce sorcery in a nation ruled by the Scarlet Spires, hmm?
Akamian glared at the old sorcerer.
But this is to be expected, is it not?
He suddenly found the whole idea preposterous. Things like this happen to other men at other times. You say that this Mathanet is cunning. What better way to secure his power than by inciting hatred against those condemned by the Tusk?
You're right, of course.
Notsera had the most infuriating way of owning one's objections.
But there's a far more disturbing reason to believe that he'll declare against us rather than the Phanum.
And what reason is that?
Because, Akamian, a voice other than Notsera's replied, there's no way that a holy war against the Phanum could succeed. Akamian peered into the darkness between columns. It was Simus, a wry smile splitting his snow-white beard. He wore a gray vestment over his blue silk gown. Even in appearance, he was water to Notsera's fire.
How was your journey?
Simus asked.
The dreams were particularly bad,
Akamian replied, somewhat bewildered by the shift between hard speculation and light pleasantries. In what now seemed a different lifetime, Simus had been his teacher,
the one to bury the innocence of a Nroni fisherman's son in the mad revelations of the Mandate. They hadn't spoken directly in years. Akamian had been abroad for a long time. But the ease of manner, the ability to speak without the detours of Jinan, remained.
What do you mean, Simmis? Why couldn't a holy war succeed against the Fainim?
Because of the Kisharum.
Again, the Kisharum.
I fear I don't follow you, old teacher. Surely it would be easier for the Enrithi to war against Kian, a nation with only one school, if the Kisharum can be called such, than for them to war against all the schools.
Simmis nodded.
On the face of things, perhaps. But think on it, Akamian. We estimate that the 1,000 temples itself has some 4,000 to 5,000 Korae, which means it could field at least as many men immune to whatever sorceries we could muster. Add to that all of the Enrithi lords who also bear trinkets, and Maethanet could field an army of perhaps 10,000 men who would be immune to us in every way.
In the Three Seas, Korae were a crucial variable in the algebra of war. In so many ways, the few were like gods compared with the masses. Only the Korae prevented the schools from utterly dominating the Three Seas.
Certainly, Akamian replied. But Maethanet could likewise field those men against the Kisharum. However different the Kisharum may be, they seem to share our vulnerabilities at least.
Could he?
Why not?
Because between those men and the Kisharum would stand all the armed might of Kian. The Kisharum are not a school, old friend. They don't stand apart as we do, from the faith and people of their nation. While the holy war struggled to overcome the heathen grandees of Kian, the Kisharum would rain ruin upon them.
Simmis lowered his chin as though testing his beard against his breastbone.
Do you see?
Akamian could see. He had dreamed of such a battle before, the fords of Taiwanre, where the hosts of ancient Exercia had burned in the fires of the consult. At the mere thought of this tragic battle, images flashed before his eyes, shadowy men thrashing in waters, consumed in towering bonfires. How many had been lost at the fords?
Like Taiwanre,
Akamian whispered.
Like Taiwanre,
Simmis replied, his voice both solemn and gentle. They had all shared this nightmare. The schoolmen of the Mandate shared every nightmare. Throughout this exchange, Nozera had regarded them narrowly. Like a prophet of the Tusk, his judgment was palpable, except where prophets saw sinners, Nozera saw fools.
And as I said, the old man remarked, this Maethanet is shrewd, a man of intellect. Surely he knows he cannot win a holy war against the Fainim.
Akamian stared blankly at the sorcerer. His earlier exhilaration had fled, replaced by a cold and dank fear. Another scholastic war. The thought of Taiwanre had shown him the terrifying dimensions of such a prospect.
This is why I've been recalled from High Anon? To prepare for this new Shrya's holy war?
No. Nozera replied decisively. We've simply told you the reasons why we fear that Maethanet might call his holy war against us. Ultimately, we don't know what he plans.
Indeed, Simmis added. Between the schools and the Fainim are undoubtedly the greatest threat to the 1,000 temples. Shaima has been lost to the heathens for centuries, and the Empire is but a frail shadow of what it once was, while Kian has become the mightiest power in the Three Seas. No, it would be far more rational for the Shrya to declare the Fainim the object of his holy war.
But, Nozera interjected, we all know that faith is no friend to reason. The distinction between the rational and the irrational means little when one speaks of the 1,000 temples.
You're sending me to Sumna, Akamian said, to discover Maethanet's true intent.
A wicked smile creased Nozera's dyed beard.
Yes.
But what good could I do? It's been years since I've been to Sumna. I've no more contacts there.
This was true or untrue, depending upon how one defined contacts. There was a woman he knew in Sumna, Esmenet.
But that had been a long time ago. And there was also... Akamian was arrested by the thought. Could they know?
But this isn't true, Notsera replied. In fact, Simus has informed us of that student of yours who...
He paused, as though searching for a term to deal with a matter too dreadful for polite conversation.
Defected.
Simus? He looked to his old teacher. Why would you tell them?
Akamian spoke cautiously. You refer to Inrao?
Yes, Notsera replied. And this Inrao has become, or so I am told,
again a glance at Simus,
a shrial priest. His tone was thick with censure. Your student, Akamian, your betrayal.
You're too harsh, as always, Notsera. Inrao was cursed, born with the sensitivities of the few, and yet with the sensibilities of a priest. Our ways would have killed him.
Ah, yes, sensibilities,
the old face replied.
But tell us, clearly, if you could, your estimation of this former student. Has he crossed the pale, or might the mandate retrieve him?
Could he be made our spy, is that what you ask?
Inrao, a spy? Obviously, Simus had compounded his betrayal by not telling them anything of Inrao.
I thought it evident, Notsera said.
Akamian paused, looked to Simus, whose face had become discouragingly serious.
Answer him, Akka, his old teacher said.
No,
Akamian replied, turning back to Notsera. Suddenly, his heart felt a stone.
No.
Inrao was born on the far side of the pale. He won't return. Cold amusement, so bitter on such an old face.
Ah, Akamian, but he will.
Akamian knew what they demanded, the sorceries and the betrayal they would entail. He had been close to Inrao, had promised to protect him. They had been close.
No,
he replied. I refuse. Inrao's spirit is frail. He doesn't have the mettle to do what you're asking. We need someone else.
There is no one else.
Nevertheless, he replied, only beginning to grasp the consequences of his rashness. I refuse.
You refuse?
Notsera spat.
Because this priest is a weakling? Akamian, you must stifle the mother in...
Akamian acts out of loyalty, Notsera.
Simus interrupted.
Don't confuse the two.
Loyalty, Notsera snapped. But this is the very heart of the issue, Simus. What we share is incomprehensible to other men. As one, we cry out in our sleep. With such a bond, like a vice, how can loyalty to another be anything short of sedition?
Sedition, Akamian exclaimed, knowing he had to proceed carefully. Such words were like casks of wine. Once unstopped, things tended to deteriorate.
You mistake me, both of you. I refuse out of loyalty to the mandate. Inrao is too frail. We risk alienating the thousand.
Such a weak lie,
Notsera growled. He then laughed, as though realizing that he should have expected this impertinence all along.
Schools. By Akamian. We are alienated in advance, but you know this.
The old sorcerer turned away from him and warmed his fingers over the coals of a nearby brazier. Orange light trimmed his grand figure, sketched his narrow lines against colossal works of stone.
Tell me, Akamian, if this Mathanet and the threat of a holy war against the schools is the work of our, to put it mildly, elusive adversary, would not Inrao's delicate life, or for that matter the Mandate's fine reputation, be worth throwing into the balance?
If, Notsera, he replied vaguely, then certainly.
Ah, yes. I'd forgotten that you numbered yourself among the skeptics. What is it you say? That we pursue ghosts?
He held the word in his mouth, as though it were a morsel of questionable food.
I guess then you would say that a possibility that we're witnessing the first signs of the No-God's return is outweighed by an actuality, the life of a defector, that rolling the dice of apocalypse is worth the pulse of a fool.
Yes, that was precisely how he felt. But how could he admit as much?
I'm prepared to be sanctioned, he tried to say evenly, but his voice, churlish, wounded. I'm not frail.
Nocera studied his face.
Skeptics, he snorted. You all make the same error. You confuse us with the other schools. But do we vie for power? Do we scurry around palaces, placing wards and sniffing sorceries like dogs? Do we whine into the ears of emperors or kings? In the absence of the consult, you confuse our actions with those who act for no purpose save that of power and its childish gratifications. You confuse us with the whores.
Could it be?
No. He'd thought it through many times. Unlike the others, those like Nocera, he could distinguish his age from the one he dreamt night after night. He could see the difference. The mandate was not merely poised between epochs. It was poised between dreams and waking life. When the skeptics, those who thought the consult had abandoned the three C's, looked at the mandate, they saw not a school compromised by worldly ambition, but the opposite. A school not in this world at all. The mandate, which was the mandate of history after all, was not to wage a dead war, or to sanctify a long-dead sorcerer driven mad by that war's horrors, but to learn, to live from the past, not in it.
Would you argue philosophy with me then, Nocera? He asked, matching the man's fierce glare.
Before, you were too harsh. But now you're simply too stupid.
Nocera blinked in astonishment. Simmis hastily interceded.
I understand your reluctance, old friend. I too have my doubts, as you know.
He looked pointedly at Nocera, who continued to stare at Akamian in disbelief.
There's strength in skepticism, Simmis continued. Those who believe thoughtlessly in dangerous times are the first to die. But these are dangerous times, Akamian. More so than in many, many years. Perhaps dangerous enough to be skeptical even of our skepticism, hm?
Akamian turned to him, caught by something in his tone. Simmis's gaze faltered. A small struggle darkened his face. He continued,
You've noticed how intense the dreams have become. I can see that much in your eyes. We've all become a little wild-eyed as of late. Something...
He paused. Unfocused his eyes as though counting his own heartbeat. Akamian felt his hackles rise. He'd never seen Simmis like this. Indecisive. Frightened, even.
Ask yourself, Akamian, he said finally. If our adversary, the consult, were to seize power in the three C's, what vehicle would be more effective than the thousand temples? Where better to hide from us and yet wield incredible power? And what better way to destroy the mandate? The last memory of the apocalypse, than by declaring a holy war against the few. Imagine men waging war against the No-God without us to guide and protect them.
Without Seswatha.
Akamian stared for a long moment at his old teacher. His doubt must have been plain for everyone to see. Nevertheless, images from the dreams came to him, a trickle of small horrors. Seswatha's internment at Dagh Liash. The crucifixion, the glint of sunlight across the bronze nails through his forearms, McCarrotrig's lips reciting the cants of agony, his shrieks, his... But that was just it. These memories weren't his. They belonged to another, to Seswatha, whose suffering must be seen through if they were to have any hope of moving on. And yet... Simmis watched him so strangely, his eyes curious with their own indecision. Something had changed. The dreams had grown more intense, relentless.
So much so that any lapse in concentration saw the present swept away in some past trauma, at times horrific enough to make one's hands shake, one's mouth form around voiceless cries. The chance that such horror could return. Was it worth sacrificing Inrao, his love, the boy who had so eased his weary heart, who had taught him to taste the air he breathed?
Curse! The mandate was a curse! Dispossessed of the god, dispossessed even of the present, only the clawing, choking fear that the future might resemble the past.
Simis, he began, but stumbled. He wanted to concede, but the mere fact that Nocera stood in his periphery silenced him.
Have I grown so petty?
Tumultuous times, certainly. A new Shrya, the Enrithi, feverish with renewed faith, the possibility that the scholastic wars could be revived, the sudden violence of the dreams?
These are the times I live in. All this happens now.
It seemed impossible.
You understand our imperative as profoundly as any of us,
Simis said quietly.
And the stakes. Inrao was with us for a short time. He might be made to understand. Without Kantz, perhaps.
Besides, Nocera added, if you refuse to go, you merely force us to send someone, how should I put it, less sentimental.
Akamian stood alone on the parapets. Even here, on the turrets overlooking the straits, he felt oppressed by the stonework of Atyrsis, diminished by the cyclopean walls. The sea offered little compensation. Things had happened so quickly, as though he'd been grasped by giant hands, rolled between palms, and then cast into a different direction. Different, but always the same. Drusus Akamian had worn many tracks across the three seas, had discarded many sandals, and never once had he even glimpsed that which he supposedly hunted. Absence. Always the same absence. The interview had gone on. It seemed obligatory that any audience with a quorum be prolonged, weighted with ritual and insufferable seriousness. Perhaps such seriousness was appropriate to the mandate, Akamian supposed, given the nature of the war, if groping in blackness could be called such. Even after Akamian had capitulated, had agreed to recruit Inrao by means fair and foul, Nocera had found it necessary to chastise him for his reluctance.
How could you forget, Akamian?
The old sorcerer had implored, his expression at once sour and beseeching.
The old names still watch from the towers of Golgotharoth. And where do they look? To the north? The north is wilderness, Akamian. Srank and ruin. No. They look south, to us, and plot with a patience that beggars the intellect. Only the mandate shares that patience. Only the mandate remembers.
Perhaps the mandate, Akamian had replied, remembers too much. But now he could only think, have I forgotten? The schoolmen of the mandate could never forget what had happened. The violence of Seswatha's dreams ensured that much. But if anything, the civilization of the three seas was insistent. The thousand temples, the scarlet spires, all the great factions warred interminably across the three seas. In the midst of such a labyrinth, the significance of the past might easily be forgotten. The more crowded the concerns of the present, the more difficult it became to see the ways in which the past portended the future. Had his concern for Inrao, a student like a son, led him to forget this? Akamian fully understood the geometry of Nocera's world. It had once been his own. For Nocera, there was no present, only the clamoring of a harrowing past and the threat of a corresponding future. For Nocera, the present had receded to a point, had become the precarious fulcrum whereby history leveraged destiny. A mere formality. And why not? The anguish of the old wars was beyond description. Almost all the great cities of the ancient north had fallen to the no-god and his consort. The great library of Soglish, ransacked. Trice,
the holy mother of cities, plundered of life. The towers of Mykle pulled down, Dagliash, Kelmiol, entire nations put to the sword. For Notsera, this Mathenet was significant not because he was Shriya, but because he might belong to this world without a present, this world whose only frame of reference was past tragedy, because he might be an author of the second apocalypse. A holy war against the schools? The Shriya, an agent of the consult? How could he not tremble at these thoughts? Despite the warm wind, Akamian shivered. Below him, the sea heaved through the straits. Dark rollers warred against one another, clashed with unearthly momentum, as though the very gods warred beneath. Inrau. For Akamian, to think this name was to know peace for a fleeting instant. He had known so little peace in his life, and now he was forced to throw that peace onto the scales with terror. He must sacrifice Inrau in order to answer these questions. Inrau had been a cultish adolescent when he'd first come to Akamian, a boy still blinking in the daybreak of manhood. Though there had been nothing extraordinary about his appearance or his intellect, Akamian had immediately recognized something different about him, a memory, perhaps, of the first student he'd loved, Nirse Proyas. But where Proyas had grown proud, overfed on the knowledge that he would someday be king, Inrau had remained Inrau. Teachers found many self-serving reasons to love their students. More than anything, they loved them simply because they listened. But Akamian had not loved Inrau as a student. Inrau, he'd realized, was good. Not good in the jaded way of the mandate, who trafficked in the mire as did all other men. No. The good he saw in Inrau had nothing to do with kind acts or praiseworthy purposes. It was something innate. Inrau harbored no secrets, no shadowy need to conceal faults or to write himself large in the estimation of other men. He was open in the way of children and fools, and he possessed the same blessed naivete, an innocence that smacked of wisdom rather than ignorance. Innocence. If there was anything Akamian had forgotten, it was innocence. How could he not fall in love with such a boy? He could remember standing with him in this very place, watching silver sunlight roll across the back of swell after swell. "The sun!" Inrau had cried. And when Akamian had asked him what he meant, Inrau had merely laughed and said, "Can't you see? Can't you see the sun?" And then Akamian had seen lines of liquid sunlight dazzling the watery distance, an inexhaustible glory. Beauty. This was Inrau's gift. He never ceased to see beauty, and because of this, he always understood, always saw through and forgave the many blemishes that marred other men. With Inrau, forgiveness preceded rather than followed transgression. "Do what you will," his eyes said, "for you are already forgiven." Inrau's decision to abandon the mandate for the Thousand Temples had at once dismayed and relieved Akamian. He'd been dismayed because he knew he'd lost Inrau and the reprieve of his company. But he'd been relieved because he knew the mandate would obliterate Inrau's innocence if the boy stayed. Akamian could never forget the night when he himself had first touched Seswatha's heart. The fisherman's son had died that moment. His eyes had been doubled, and the world itself had been transformed, rendered cavernous by tragic history. Inrau would have likewise died. Touching Seswatha's heart would have charred his own. How could such innocence, any innocence, survive the terror of Seswatha's dreams? How could one find solace in mere sunlight when the threat of the no-god loomed across every horizon? Beauty was denied victims of the apocalypse. But the mandate did not tolerate defections. The Gnosis was far too precious to be trusted with malcontents. This had been Notsera's unspoken threat throughout their exchange. "The boy is a defector, Akamian. Either way, he should die." How long had the Quorum known that his story of Inrau's drowning was a sham? From the very beginning? Or had Simis truly betrayed him? of the innumerable acts Akamian had committed in his lifetime, securing Inrao's escape was the one he considered a genuine accomplishment. The one act, good, in and of itself, even if he'd forsaken his school in order to achieve it. Akamian had protected innocence, had allowed it to flee to a safer place. How could anyone condemn such a thing? But every act could be condemned. The same as all bloodlines could be traced to some long-dead king, all deeds could be chased to some potential catastrophe. One need only follow the Forks far enough. If Inrao were seized by another of the schools and forced to yield those few secrets he knew, then the Gnosis would be eventually lost, and the Mandate would be condemned to the impotent obscurity of a minor school, perhaps even destroyed. Had he done the right thing, or had he simply made a wager? Was the pulse of a good man worth rolling the dice of apocalypse? Nocera had argued no, and Akamian had agreed. The dreams. What had happened could not happen again. This world must not die. 1,000 innocents, 1,000,000, were not worth the possibility of a second apocalypse. Akamian had agreed with Nocera. He would betray Inrao for the reasons innocents are always betrayed. Fear. He leaned against the stone and stared down and across the churning straits, struggling to remember what it had looked like that sunny day with Inrao. He could not. Mathanet and Holy War. Soon Akamian would leave at Yersus for the Nansur city of Sumna, the holiest of cities for the Enrithi, home of the 1,000 temples and the Tusk. Only Shima, the birthplace of the latter prophet, was as holy. How many years had passed since he'd last visited Sumna? 5? 7? He idly wondered if he would find Esmanet there, whether she still lived. She had always been able to ease his heart somehow. And it would be good to see Inrao as well, despite the circumstances. At the very least, the boy had to be warned. They know, dear boy. I failed you. So little comfort in the sea. Filled by a wan loneliness, Akamian looked beyond the straits in the direction of faraway Sumna. He yearned to once again see these two people, one whom he'd loved only to lose to the 1,000 temples, the other whom he thought he might love. Were he a man, and not a sorcerer and a spy. After watching Akamian's lonely figure wind down into the cedar forests beneath at Yersus, Nocera lingered on the parapets, savoring the odd flash of sunlight and studying the storm-heaped clouds that fissured the northern sky. This time of year, Akamian's voyage to Sumna was certain to be fraught with inclement weather. He would survive the voyage, Nocera knew, through the Gnosis if he had to, but would he survive the far greater storm that awaited him? Would he survive Mathanet?
Our task is so great, he thought, and our tools so frail.
Shaking himself from his reverie, a bad habit that had only worsened with age, he hastened into the ponderous galleries, ignoring the passage of peers and subordinates alike. After a time he found himself in the papyrus gloom of the library, his old bones aching from exertion. As expected, he found Simus hunched over an ancient manuscript. Lantern light glistened across a thin line of spilt ink, which Nocera momentarily confused for blood. He watched the oblivious man for a moment, troubled by a flare of resentment. Why did he begrudge Simus so? Was it because the man's eyes had yet to fail, while Nocera, like so many others, had to rely on his students to read to him?
The light's better in the scriptorium, Nocera said, startling the old sorcerer.
The friendly face jerked up, peered into the murk. Is it now? But not the company, I imagine. Always some wry quip. Simus, in the end, was a predictable man. Or was that also part of the sham? Like the faint air of doddering gentility he used to disarm his students.
We should have told him, Simus.
The old man frowned and absently scratched his beard. Told him what? That Mathanet had already called the faithful to declare the object of his holy war? That half of his mission is mere pretext? Akamian will find out soon enough.
No,
They had needed that omission at least to make the prospect of betraying his student more palatable for the man. Simmis nodded and sighed deeply.
You're worried about the other thing, then. If there's one lesson we've learned from the consult, old friend, it's that ignorance is a potent tool.
As is knowledge. Would we deny him the tools he needs? What if he's careless? Men often grow careless in the absence of any real threat.
Simmis shook his head with dismissive vigor.
But he travels to Sumna, Nutsera. Or have you forgotten? He'll take care. What sorcerer wouldn't in the den of the thousand temples, hm? Especially in times such as these.
Nutsera pursed his lips and remained silent. Simmis leaned back from his manuscript, as if uncluttering his concentration. He studied Nutsera keenly.
You've heard new reports, he said at length. Someone else is dead.
Simmis had always possessed the uncanny ability to guess the cause of his many humors.
Worse, Nutsera said. Missing. This morning, Parthelsus reported that his primary informant in the Tidoni court has vanished without a trace. Our agents are being hunted, Simmis.
It must be them.
Them, Nutsera shrugged. Or the Scarlet Spires. Or even the Thousand Temples. The Emperor's spies, remember, seem to be suffering a similar fate in Sumna. Either way, a Akamian should have been told.
Always so puritanical, Nutsera. No. Whoever assails us is either too timid or too canny to do so directly. Rather than strike at our sorcerers of rank, they strike at our informants, at our eyes and ears in the Three Seas. For whatever reason, they hope to render us deaf and dumb.
Though he appreciated the dreadful implications of this, Nutsera failed to see the connection.
So?
So Drusus Akamian was my student for many years. I know him. He uses men as a spy must, but he's never acquired a taste for it, the way a spy must. By nature, he's an uncharacteristically open man. Weak.
Akamian was weak, or so Nutsera had always thought, but what bearing could this have on their obligations to him?
I'm too weary for your riddles, Simmis. Speak plain.
Simmis's eyes flashed in annoyance.
Riddles? I thought I was being quite clear.
At last we see the real you, old friend.
It comes to this, Simmis continued. Akamian befriends the people he uses, Nutsera. If he knew his contacts might be hunted, he would hesitate. And, perhaps more important, if he knew that Atyrsus itself had been infiltrated, he might censor the information he gave us in order to protect his contacts. Remember that he lied, Nutsera, risked the Gnosis itself to protect that treacherous student of his.
Nutsera graced the man with a rare smile, and though it felt wicked upon his face, it seemed eminently justified.
I agree. Such a thing would be intolerable. But for a long time, Simmis, our success has depended on granting autonomy to our agents in the field. We've always trusted those who know the situation best to make the best decisions. And now, at your insistence, we deny one of our brothers the knowledge he needs, knowledge that could save his life.
Simmis abruptly stood and approached him in the shadows. Despite the man's small stature and grandfatherly mien, Nocera's skin prickled as he drew near.
But it's never quite so simple, is it now, old friend? It's the concert of knowledge and ignorance that underwrites our decisions. Trust me when I tell you, we've struck the proper proportion with Akamian. Was I wrong when I told you Inrao's defection would prove useful someday?
No,
Nutsera admitted, remembering their heated arguments of 2 years past. He had worried that Simmis was merely protecting a beloved student, then. But if the years had taught Nutsera one thing about Polkaius Simmis, it was that the man was as shrewd as he was devoid of sentiment.
Then trust me in this,
Simmis urged, raising a friendly, ink-stained hand to his shoulder.
Come, old friend, we have arduous tasks of our own.
Satisfied, Nutsera nodded. Arduous tasks, indeed. Whoever hunted their informants did so with galling ease, and that could mean only one thing.
despite reliving Seswatha's anguish night after night, a mandate schoolman had turned traitor.